another episode of Sacred Cinema here on 2XX 98.3 FM, People Powered Radio. I'm your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, for the next half hour, and this week's episode is entitled A Single Mother's Burden. I'm pretty sure it already came out in parts of Europe and other parts of the world, but it comes out on the 8th of June here in Australia. It's One Fine Morning, directed by Mia Hansen-Løve, starring Leah Seydoux. And Seydoux plays a single mother of a young girl who has a father who's quite ill, and he goes off to a hospital and she's got to deal with that, and then on an aged care facility, I should say, and then she's got this new boy in her life, and he's a bit of an interesting one. And I realised in watching it that we've never really done a week where we focused on mothers before, and we've focused on widows before, but we never focused specifically on single mothers and like the motherly element of that. And I think it's some really interesting archetypal substance to tap into, particularly given that a couple of weeks ago we looked at the monstrous feminine and talk about, deficits in feminine protagonists in accessing too much of an aggressive side or the power of doing so and the tension in trying to access something that's sort of on the other side of the fence there. And you definitely get a lot of those themes as well in a lot of the films, in the films we're going to talk about, in terms of, I guess on a very archetypal level, you could say that these are feminine characters that have, like their life has a deficit in that they're raising these children on their own, and they need some support of some description. And with respect to the three films we're going to talk about, there's so much overlap. There's so many recurring motifs in all of them. I felt that this week we should do one of those kinds of weeks where we look at things rather than going from movie, that we go theme. So I guess what we're doing this week is we're kind of like on an archetypal level, like, and we always do this on the show, we're not necessarily talking about single mothers per se, but rather on an archetypal level, the sort of inner single mother in everyone, the inner single mother in everyone's psyche. And I suppose on a more symbolic level, we could say we're talking about the inner abandoned feminine caregiver, right? The abandoned, not necessarily nurturer, but the abandoned caregiver, because we'll unpack this a lot in this week's show, but all of the characters do have people that are vulnerable in their lives that depend on them. And we talk about this, there's a constant struggle between looking after those people and looking after themselves, and this kind of yearning for some support, be it through a husband or a boyfriend or elsewhere. And it's going to be quite a complicated week in that. I just want to really make sure that we make that clear, because I don't want to fall down too traditional a pathway going off last week, where we just fall back on old ideas around, every woman should have a husband and that sort of thing. I think that it's much more dense, it's more symbolic than that, and we're going to flesh out sort of how complex it is with the three films we're going to talk about, but theme by theme. But the three films are One Fine Morning, directed by Mia Hansen-Løve. Then we're also going to talk about As Good As It Gets, directed by James L. Brooks. It's focusing specifically not so much on Jack Nicholson's character, but the Helen Hunt character. And then we're also going to talk, of course, about Erin Brockovich by Steven Soderbergh from the year 2000. But let's get started now. And in terms of the themes we're going to touch on, we're going to talk about five general themes. The first one is, well, I call it the complicated and inevitable yearning or longing for a companion, let's say. And there's various reasons why the specific feminine caregivers or the single mothers in these films do that. And I think just in talking about how it's different, that sort of expands it out of it not simply just being, as we said a second ago, it's not simply a traditional sort of, every woman needs a man or everybody longs for a man. We see it's quite a diverse set of reasons why the characters in these films do that. And I should say from the get-go, I've talked about this on the show before, but when we have common themes in multiple films or in multiple pieces of art, I think that's generally indicative that we're in archetypal territory, or if we see universality in various depictions of the same kind of archetype, that's kind of lifting up this idea of inevitability or unavoidableness, that if it's happening to all of these characters, it's probably happening to all of us, or to that inner single mother within us all. In this case, I suppose the universal element of it is this yearning for companionship, but there's a great deal of personal uniqueness and individuality in terms of why that is in each of these cases. So I'm glad we've made that clear from the get-go. So with As Good As It Gets, I suppose part of why Helen Hunt wants to find a companion, she's very explicit about that in that scene where she's at the dinner table with her mother, is kind of to avoid the opposite, which is a life kind of doomed to bitterness. There's that scene where she catches herself out. If you haven't seen the film, she talks to her mother about how she saw this young couple on the street and it made her feel sick and she couldn't deal with them and she hated that about herself. And it kind of lifts up this idea that you kind of can't, you can only really pick one or the other. You can pick to have a companion and to pursue love and companionship in your life, or it kind of suggests that there's an inevitable sense of bitterness or like a bitter kind of loneliness if one doesn't pursue that, if one doesn't pursue love. And I'm not talking about this in necessarily a monogamous situation or a heteronormative situation, but just if one rejects love and camaraderie and compassion in their life, it kind of leads them potentially to this, oh, I don't want to see this bitterness within me kind of thing. In Erin Brockovich, it's almost like a different thing altogether. I guess bluntly put, the reason why Erin goes after a fella is to so he can look after her children. That sort of subverts a traditional idea that, you know, the woman is necessarily the one that looks after the children. And she wants him to do that so she can go after and go do her business. And I don't mean to sound off, but when I was watching this movie, I did sort of have this moment where I realized that the idea of the savvy, resilient, and persistent feminine archetype is kind of one that we, I think just on a natural level, on an innate level, we kind of want to see more. And this is something I did talk about a couple of weeks ago with the monstrous feminine thing, how princesses and dainty damsels, there's a lot more to them. We actually, you know, part of the fulfillment, part of the sense of satisfaction we feel in listening to the stories is actually seeing them transcend out of that daintiness. And in watching this film, and particularly in terms of just not just how sort of sexually attractive she is, but we do see something like on this innate level, she's attractive in a very genuine sense. Like we're drawn to people. There's a sense of magnetism there. We're drawn to people who exhibit that kind of I'm going to go out into the world and do something for myself and make my situation better and you know, flaunt every part of me in order to get what I need to get in on a sort of more substantive level, to do something more genuine and authentic with my life. It's something that we see I think that those traits are desirable in our countrymen, in our tribes people, on a kind of primordial level. So I think we should just check that box to begin with today, which is that, despite the fact that we do see this inevitability of wanting to find companionship, very often that is because it's a means of someone going out and being a very empowered individual. And this actually leads to a very interesting choice, which is in the next film, which is in One Fine Morning, we actually do see that the reason why Lea Seydoux's character goes after her fella is not really because of a place, not because of out of necessity, not because she is in a financially dire situation. She actually has, and there's a bit of dialogue at the start of the film how she says, like, I'm through with love, I don't need love anymore, it doesn't need to be part of my life. I think this is a really beautiful depiction of how love can be one of those things that you can't avoid. When you love someone, you love them, and very often, you know, it's not necessarily a single mother thing, but maybe a human thing, that you can't avoid love when it is so infectious. And I think this film does an amazing job. It's one of the, you know when you watch a film, you're like, I don't remember watching another film that does this as well as this film does, but it certainly puts you in that place that you recall being in, particularly maybe when you're younger in life, where love is, particularly young love or early love, is extremely infectious. It's extremely compelling and captivating. You know, that kind of unavoidable love where you can't think about anyone else, or you can't think about anything else, even if you might be a little bit suspicious if they're good for you, or, you know, whether you think you're being a good feminist or something, going after this guy that might be toxic, that kind of deep love that penetrates you. So we're starting off with this place Now, where companionship is kind of this inevitable thing. So there's part of the condition of being the single mother, the burden of the single mother, is this constant leaning towards wanting to have someone to maybe help with the burdens of it or to sort of balance us out. But there's another interesting motif, and this is the second thing we're going to talk about today, is this motif of the imperfect spouse. We see this on a couple of different levels. In As Good As It Gets, we see Jack Nicholson, who's the main romantic guy in the romance, her main romantic interest, is first of all a lot older than her, and he also has obsessive compulsive disorder. So there's like a mental impairment there that makes it difficult for her to engage in this relationship with him. And in Aaron Brockovich, the Aaron Eckhart character, is a bit of a ruffian. He's a bit of a biker. He's got the bandana. He's got the moustache, and he's a bit rougher. There's a whole scene at the beginning about do I really want this guy to look after my kids? And then in One Fine Morning, what's really important is that the love interest in that film is a cheater. He's actually got another family, and so the whole time of the film, we always don't feel like we can actually trust him, and perhaps that's an enduring thing in their relationship from there on. And so none of those above. Mentioned male characters in these films or these potential companions are perfect. And we actually even get like a pretty explicit line in As Good As It Gets when Helen Hunt screams out, why can't I have a normal boyfriend? And her mother says, well, that's what everyone wants, and that's not real. And interesting as well, we actually have the mother. We never see Helen Hunt's father. Again, we have a sort of like a single mother. It's maybe her, like a projection of her future self throughout this film as well. So with this, if we're in the land of the archetypal, and we're talking about a neglected or an abandoned caregiver, we have this motif of instability, things being unsettled, nothing ever working out. And we sort of talked about at the start of this film that there's an inner single mother in all, sort of at the start of the show, we talked about there's this sort of this inner single mother idea in all of us. And I suppose what we, even if you're not a mother, if you're a father, or you're the opposite, if you think you're the opposite, we all have that part of us that is always sort of waiting for the other foot to drop, the chair to stop wobbling, or the waters to go calm, in any which way, that you might project that onto your life. We all have that yearning to sort of fall onto the other foot and feel that things are finally going to become stable and someone is eventually going to help us deal with the burdens of our existence. And these films remind us in a really clever way that our counterpoint can exist, right? And a certain kind of imperfect balance can be attained when we do listen to our heart, and our heart ought to be listened to because love is very infectious and that sort of thing. But there is no happy ever after. Nothing ever ends perfectly. And this is kind of what happens at the end of all the films. Like in As Good As It Gets, the image we get, Jack Nicholson has still got his obsessive compulsive disorder at the end of this film. Helen Hunt's son is still sick at the end of this film. That's a clear, important plot point. We're going to flesh it a bit more in a second. And there is this sort of cute little sense of happy ever afterness by the end of the film, but it's because they go in from a cold, rainy morning into some random bakery in the middle of Helen Hunt's neighborhood. It's not an amazing, magnificent moment of a carriage pulling into a castle. There's a sense of, it's got a sense of cuteness, or it's sort of adorable, but it's not majestic. It's street level. It's relatable. But it's not something that you feel. You're not left with a sense that these two are going to be happily ever after. They might stay together for a long time, but it's not a sense of happy ever after. It's the same in Aaron Brockovich. The end of the film, Aaron Brockovich is still working very hard because there are people that are still in need. And this idea of the enduring, the people, the human vulnerability having an enduring perpetual quality is something we're going to talk about a lot in a second. And also in One Fine Morning, and I really don't want to give it away because it is a new movie, but I think the power of this film, at least for me personally, came from the unexpectedness of the ending. It's not a typical ending, and it left me feeling a bit like there were still a few scenes to go in a way, but I think that was kind of the point. I don't mean that in a critical way. I mean, it's sort of like, of course it doesn't end in the way that you expect, because life never does. And this is almost kind of like a trite point to make. I feel like we make that every second week. But I think it's really important in the context of this, when we're talking about single mothers who are, the idea of single, it goes against the default, which is a couple, a couple having a child is the traditional idea. So we're constantly in this state of being tilted towards stability, feeling that there's always something that needs to push us back, particularly after making that first point about the yearning for companionship. So we're at this, we're kind of at the dip now. We're kind of at the rock bottom point. And I want to sink deeper into this and kind of get into the more gritty end of things. There's a motif of sickness in all of these films. On one level, there's on the first level, there's a lot of sick children in all of these films, particularly in As Good As It Gets. Helen Hunt's son is sick, but also at the very beginning, what we learn about Erin Brockovich is that the woman that she's become is partly educated by her children being sick. That's like the first thing that she says about like her life at the beginning of the film, but then these films expand out. We escalate from the personal to the political in Erin Brockovich when we think about the fact that her whole thing, and I haven't really fleshed out that film at all if you haven't seen it, but it's essentially about a single mother that gets a job at a law firm and realizes as a paralegal that there's this massive class action that they could run against this water or this gas company that's been contaminating the water in this random town. So her whole thing is that she kind of abandons her own children and her own family to kind of become the ipso facto mother, the de facto mother for this community in a way. So we're seeing, we're going from sick children, we're expanding out from the personal to the political to sick towns, sick societies. We're seeing the single mother operating in that space as well. And then also in One Fine Morning, we expand things out again from the traditional mother-child image, but to the caretaker slash vulnerable person image, in that Lea Seydoux's character's her daughter is totally fine in this film, but it's her father who's very sick. And we go from aged care facility to aged care facility throughout the film. We're going to expand on that a little bit more in a second. But again, we have this motif of caregiving, looking after. It does beg this question. Why are we always seeing the single mother with invalids? Why are we always seeing them with people who are vulnerable and sick? And I just want to make a side note before we get into that, which is that this often happens in mythological and archetypal conversations or conversations about mythology and archetypes and that sort of thing. You often see language in articles and literature about mythology that use words like identified with and associated with when you're talking about a specific god or goddess. You know, you might say something like, oh, you know, Selene is often associated with Artemis, often seen with or identified, particularly in the context of mythology in art. And we can use that same language this way. We're often seeing single mother characters with invalids. Now, the obvious answer to that is because it's a very easy way of exaggerating or enhancing the sense of struggle or the sense of busyness or the sense of stress that these single mothers have. And in a very traditional way, it's like, you know, mothers have children, that's what makes them mothers. And the worst thing for a mother is having a sick child. And that's how we can sort of indicate. But I want to talk about that on more of an abstract level. I think it's kind of symbolic of the single mother's core motivation. It's kind of like the language or the yardstick that we use to assess their character's development. But I don't mean that in the traditional way, which is like a sick child is indicative of a failing mother and a healthy child is indicative of a successful mother. We are talking about in terms of, you know, these mothers, you know, what's central to their characters is that they do care a lot and they are concerned for their respective vulnerable relations. And we definitely see this in the Helen Hunt character, for example, in As Good As It Gets, when, you know, the sense of elation she feels when she finds out how her boy is getting attention from a proper doctor. But I want to talk about it just on a little bit more of a general sense just for now, and on a sort of simplistic, basic, bottom line sense. I think the reason why we see these images together all the time is because the kind of enduring condition or the enduring burden of the single mother archetype is to mediate and to mediate this sort of seemingly eternal, ailments or the grievances, the eternal grievances of those that are dependent on others. So that's not to say that it's always their job, but it's to say that they're always the ones burdened with it. And so it is the language of sort of their own development, but not in the sense that, you know, we should blame them if something's going wrong, but it's rather like a barometer on how they're going or how maybe society more broadly is treating them. And this leads us to a really interesting point that I was quite excited to make. Before I do, I just want to touch on that word enduring. We definitely see this in all the films, but specifically in One Fine Morning, there's this kind of this sense of a constant, you know, constant repetitive issues regarding aged care homes. There's no sort of perfect stable finish line with getting Leah Seydoux's dad to one of the aged care homes. They keep going from place to place to place, and it's like a, one of the main plot points is that they can never get this guy settled in a room that has nice light and has a nice bed, and the people that look after him is good, and everything's sort of, you know, all neat and tidy. And there is sort of like a point that emerges from that film. It's like that, that point is never really going to happen, and it is sort of like one of those inevitable tragic sort of parts of life that people get older, they get sicker. That's something that you can't avoid that. And because that is adjacent to her love life and the story of her love life, I think that the film lifts up this idea that even if we do get to a place where, you know, we feel like things might be stabilizing in terms of our emotional lives, you know, even if love is blooming, it's fading elsewhere. And vice versa, where it fades in one realm, it kind of blossoms in another. And we kind of have this sliding doors thing happening in that film. And anyway, I want us to slide, you know, on this conversation about this sort of enduring condition of constantly being associated, but specifically constantly being burdened with looking after. It's sort of where our minds go. We immediately associate the vulnerable with these kinds of archetypes, with the single mother archetype. And it's not just a concern for them, but a societal concern. Each of these films, very coincidentally, and I don't know if coincidentally is the right word, because I think it actually, there's a reason why this is, but all of these films explore, or at least in the backdrop of all these films, is where we're seeing depictions of the provider of public goods being limited in its capacity to provide public goods. So if we want to elevate this conversation out of the personal into like a political realm, you could say that our single mother characters are kind of symbolic of institutional caregivers. In other words, the state, I guess you could say, that don't have the requisite support or help. I suppose in a more crude sense, what we could say is we're talking about the modern welfare state or modern social liberal democracies without sufficient tax funding, or without a sufficiently committed populace. And I'm not just sort of making this up to make a broader point. Each film is really, is literally set against a backdrop of the failing state. So in As Good As It Gets, we see the failings of the private healthcare system. In Erin Brockovich, we're seeing the failings of an improperly, or a water system that's not properly regulated. And then in One Fine Morning, we're seeing the failings of a proper aged care system. So this does lead us to this interesting conversation around, is there a remedy for this, right? We've seen these characters yearning for companionship. We see that their companions aren't necessarily perfect. The problem with that is that they're constantly associated, constantly burdened with sickness and vulnerability. And if we look at that on a political level, that makes us feel uneasy as well. We don't like seeing systems that are supposed to provide public goods, supposed to look after the vulnerable, doing so insufficiently. So is there an answer to that? And this is what we're going to talk about, the fifth and final theme for this week. And in all these films, we see some character, very often the male character, and I'm not sure that that's necessarily a celebration of masculinity, but rather putting shifting the burden in a good way onto these masculine counterparts, of the power of stepping in. So all of the counterparts, all of the respective companions in these films learn that the key to their own success, the key to their maturation, their personal fulfillment, is to step in and to relieve each of our single mothers of their burdens. And this is why this episode and all these films aren't sexist. If you've been listening to this episode, you're like, Jesus, Jimmy, we're really getting into some tradition I've sort of joked about throughout the show. We see that all of the morals of all these stories, I suppose, in a very crude and basic sense, is that these male figures actually step in, and these single mothers are no longer purely and only the ones associated with these vulnerable and sick people that need to be nurtured. So in As Good As It Gets, we see that Jack Nicholson comes good by paying for their health bills for this kid, and for driving Greg Kinnear's character to Baltimore, if you've seen the film. In Erin Brockovich, Aaron Eckhart's character, you know, is empowered eventually by looking after the children, but also seeing the ramifications that has on the sick people that Erin Brockovich is looking after. So we see like a reversal or a subversion of traditional gender roles there, even though the characters in and of themselves are, you know, Erin Brockovich is she has masculine qualities, but she's a, you know, she's a very attractive, sexy lady, and Aaron Eckhart is a very masculine, bikey type. So it's a subversion in a sense, but it's on a deeper level, it's not. He's still stepping in to relieve her of this kind of burden, which is something we like to see. And then, as we do in all these other films, thus this how archetypal it is. But and also in One Fine Morning, we see that this idea of commitment to a family, despite maybe being someone that's not particularly good at that. And I don't want to talk about the ending of this film too much, and we never really know how this couple is going to end up in the end, I suppose. But we do, as audience members, we do have that sense of yearning that we do want this guy to step up. We get an idea of what we want to see from this guy. So let's tie everything together this way. We talked at the start about how when we're talking about the single mother archetype, we're talking about this abandoned feminine caregiver figure. We see that this is often this yearning for balance and stability, for a counterpart, for a companion. That you can't do it all on your own when you have the burden of a child or a sick parent or something like that. Even when you're financially stable, we still have a yearning for love. We still have a yearning for companionship. But we can never really attain the full extent of stability, just by, you know, marrying someone. That counterpart is also going to be very flawed. They're going to have an imperfect character about them, and the problem with that is that it's all well and good to say that things aren't perfect, but we don't want to get to a situation where we have the same types of people, i.e. single mothers, for example, or the abandoned feminine, constantly burdened with the sick and the vulnerable. In a traditional sense, we do often see those images together, and it brings about an amount of concern. It sort of lumps these two things together as almost like a call to arms or a call to action, that this is sort of a condition or a universal or a fundamental burden of single mothers that ought to be relieved. And if we expand that out to the political level, we see that in the everyday, on the institutional level. We don't like it when we see the state without the sufficient means of fixing a problem. We don't like seeing a country or any kind of institution not be given the requisite amount of supports that it needs to look after those vulnerable people that it's so often, or dare I say too often, burdened with, lumped with. As a society, we often just push things off to a certain group or a certain institution, expecting it to deal with things on its own. And then when we see that, it makes us feel bad. We don't like to say that necessarily. So as onlookers, right, maybe that what we need to do is we need to value the impact and the nobility achieved in stepping in, right, doing more than what society expects of us, but doing it because we know that that's what's going to lead to a greater good. And also just like a selfish level, like it makes you feel better to help other people and to relieve people of a burden. That's a very simple, it's very simple to think about that, like on the individual level. Like we can understand that for like a husband and a wife kind of thing, but if we want to look at society as well through that same lens, we very quickly see that we and everyone we know has the potential to be quite vulnerable. It was vulnerable to being neglected, kind of like society's children. And the burden shouldn't necessarily always fall singularly on those who have no choice in the matter, those that birth the problems and are lumped with them just because of natural processes. Perhaps we need to see the part that we can play in sharing that burden. That's all the time we've got this week on Sacred Cinema here on 2XX 98.3 FM, People Powered Radio. Stay tuned for more quality radio programming here on the People Powered Radio station. And hopefully we see you again next week here on Sacred Cinema. Just a reminder to get in touch if you have any recommendations. Erin Brockovich was a recommendation, actually. You can email me at contact@jimmybernasconi.com. We'll see you again next week. Cheers.